ABSC News presents The Defense Critics.
An issue often overlooked by the mainstream media while examining the topic of ballistic missile defenses is the environmental toll imposed upon our natural environment by such systems. In mid to late August of this year, a collaborative legal effort was undertaken by citizens' environmental groups charging the Pentagon with attempting to build a national missile defense test bed in Alaska without properly updating the Environmental Impact Statement, or EIS, for such a project. The litigants allege that the Pentagon is violating the National Environmental Policy Act. Christopher E. Payne, a senior research analyst for the Natural Resources Defense Council's nuclear program, the Natural Resources Defense Council being one of the groups legally challenging the Pentagon's National Missile Defense Test Bed deployment in Alaska, explains the reason for the collaborative judicial action.
Well, we're alleging that Pentagon and the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization have violated the National Environmental Policy Act and its implementing regulations. And they've done that by failing to prepare what's called a Supplemental Programmatic Environmental Impact Statement for their, you know, newly restructured and greatly expanded ballistic missile defense program. We're also arguing that they've failed to prepare a project-specific environmental impact statement on a component of that overall program, which is called the Missile Defense System Test Bed, which they're proposing to deploy in Alaska and in other locations, and that they've failed to prepare that EIS prior to initiating the first phase of work at Fort Greely in Alaska on a portion of the Missile Defense System Test Bed. So there are two components to our legal complaint: the fact that they failed to analyze their overall program for its environmental impacts, and also that they've specifically failed to analyze their proposed missile defense system test bed, which is a component of their overall project. And, you know, we're on that basis, we've asked the court to issue a declaratory judgment that the Pentagon is in violation of the National Environmental Policy Act, and we will probably be seeking, in the event that the Pentagon doesn't want to cooperate in preparing these environmental impact statements, we'll probably be seeking a mandatory injunction from the court that orders the Pentagon to prepare these EISs, or environmental impact statements.
Melanie Dutchin, a climate and nuclear campaigner for Greenpeace USA, also one of the groups litigating the case, details the history behind the environmental impact statement complaint.
The Bush administration, first off, that the Clinton administration put out their environmental impact statement in July of 2000. In July of 2001, the Department of Defense unveiled a whole new program to increase Star Wars spending by $3 billion to over $8 billion a year. And that included developing a hugely expanded test range in Alaska and the Northeast Pacific. And none of that was described in the Clinton administration EIS. The July 2000 Clinton administration environmental impact statement did not analyze the impacts of this newly expanded and integrated Star Wars testing and quote-unquote emergency deployment program that the Department of Defense wants to implement at Fort Greely. And basically, the Bush plan includes a large integrated test bed that would accelerate the testing and the deployment of a multi-layered defense system, which includes ground-based systems, sea and air-based elements, and covering all the phases of a missile flight trajectory, including the booster stage, the mid-course stage, the terminal stage. And if you look at the Clinton environmental impact statement, the only thing that was analyzed was a ground-based element to counter long-range missiles in the mid-course of their flight trajectory. And I know that's a whole lot of probably, you know, maybe folks' eyes or ears are glazing over as I listen to that, but basically what was included in the Clinton environmental impact statement is a small slice of the pie that the current Department of Defense wants to proceed with. And what they need to do is analyze the entire pie and not proceed with what they want to do based on just the Clinton administration EIS. It's out of date, it's defunct, and it's insufficient. And that's the basis of our lawsuit.
Christopher E. Payne explains the timeline the court case is likely to follow.
Well, this is going to take a number of months to work out, as justice is often slow. But the timetable we've set for ourselves is really based on the Pentagon's timetable, which is that they propose to actually start construction of silos and actually start building things in Alaska next spring when the construction season resumes up there. It's difficult to build in the wintertime. So I would think by April or May of next year, we would need to have some declaratory relief from the court and hopefully an injunction directing the Pentagon to delay implementation of these projects until they've completed environmental impact statements. And in order to keep with that timetable, we would have to file for a injunctive relief probably sometime in October.
Chris Payne also detailed some of the legal precedents of similar cases.
I would say on the question of declaratory relief, on finding that the Pentagon is actually in violation of NEPA for not updating its old programmatic environmental impact statement and not preparing a new one on the missile defense system testbed, chances of getting a judgment from the court on that question are very good. The question of whether the court will take the next step and actually force the Pentagon to delay implementing projects while it prepares these documents, that's a much more uncertain question. The courts are traditionally very reluctant to do that when it involves a so-called national security program. But we will certainly try to get that kind of relief. But it's not, if you look at precedents on these kinds of questions, courts actually stepping in and ordering the Pentagon not to proceed with programs until they've done the environmental impacts analysis, the precedent's not strong. The courts are intimidated typically by the national security moniker. Whenever a government agency comes in and claims it's for the national security, courts typically get a little wobbly in the knees, and it's just human nature. In many cases involving national security programs, the agency goes ahead and prepares an environmental impact statement even as it is implementing the project that it is analyzing. It's not unheard of for that to happen, unfortunately. That does violence to the very purpose of NEPA, which is that the documents are supposed to be prepared so that they can inform the decision-making process, not rationalize it after the fact. But given that the way that most government agencies, especially the national security agencies, tend to prepare these documents, almost always they're used to ratify decisions already made. That's unfortunately the courts have allowed the implementation of NEPA to deteriorate to that extent. It's a problem of the kinds of judges that have been appointed over the last two decades. General conservatism of the judicial apparatus has allowed this to happen. But if you go back and look at the original statute and the implementing regulations, it's quite clear that the purpose of NEPA is to force agencies to prepare environmental impact statements prior to making decisions about how to implement their programs so that they can implement them in the least environmentally damaging manner possible. That's the whole purpose of the statute. But unfortunately, courts have been very reluctant to enforce the timeliness of the NEPA requirement.
Christopher E. Payne describes some of the environmental effects of constructing a testbed in Alaska.
Well, of course, constructing in the permafrost region in Alaska has more potential for damaging environmental impacts than it does in a normal temperate climate, because you're disturbing the permafrost zone, and you have to take special steps in construction to compensate for that. But the overall environmental impacts from missile defense testing, development, and ultimately deployment are can be quite significant, depending on how far the system actually goes. Flight testing of missiles, of course, puts ozone depleting chemicals into the atmosphere, as does a system that would launch many infrared satellites into space to serve as a tracking and discrimination system for ballistic missile defense. The Bush administration is proposing to deploy a $20 billion satellite system called a space-based infrared system, which will require many, many space launches to put into orbit. And each space launch produces significant quantities of ozone-depleting chemicals and injects them into the upper atmosphere where they do the most damage in terms of the Earth's protective ozone layer. So there's an important environmental impact to be analyzed there. One of the missile testing sites that they're proposing is Kodiak Island off the south coast of Alaska. Kodiak is one of the world's biological gems. It's a magnificent, beautiful place. Most of it is wildlife refuge. And some people are offended by the very notion that there would be a military testing facility injected into this pristine environment. Certainly the noise impacts, the risk of explosive fires and detonations, accidental detonations at the missile launch site, the downrange impacts of having the missile stages drop into the ocean in a gray whale migration route, the location of the missile test site near the breeding areas for the stellar sea lion, the construction of fiber optic cable lines that would cross salmon spawning streams, and so forth. Yet, yes, there are significant environmental impacts from proceeding with this system in an environment like Alaska.
He also expounded upon the effects of testing staged missiles in the area.
The effects of the dropping missile stages is the main reason that that the United States currently tests only over the open ocean. We do not conduct missile tests, staged missile tests, over populated areas. Now, the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization is proposing to produce these five test silos at Fort Greeley, and they claim now, under the current environmental impact statement, that they are not going to test missiles from that site. Rather, they're going to transport them about 500 miles down the Kodiak Peninsula, the Kenai Peninsula, down to Kodiak Island, and launch the missiles from there, thereby avoiding populated areas. But they've also said in testimony to Congress that they're going to study the possibility of launching them out of Fort Greeley, in which case these missile stages would be dropping on populated areas. And so that's something to be concerned about. But even launching from Kodiak, the trajectories, some of the proposed trajectories go over native villages. And they have suggested to the local residents that if they use those trajectories, they will create shelters for the native communities to huddle in during the launches. And there's a fairly narrow corridor over the open ocean where these stages are supposed to drop. But obviously, if the missiles, if the tests go awry and wander off course, these missile stages will be dropping who knows where. So, there are significant issues, safety and environmental issues that United States government needs to look at before it proceeds with a program on this scale. According to the local activists up in Kodiak, when the Pentagon was apprised that in fact some of these trajectories would go over Native Alaskan communities, the officer in charge of the briefing said, "Oh well, we'll just." Build shelters for those people to go to in the event that we use those missile trajectories. The overall problem. I mean, I think stages dropping on fishing boats or whales is not a highly probable event, but it's something that they're obligated to look at. I mean, obviously, testing over the open ocean gives you a pretty big area in which to, in which for these things to come down, where they're not likely to hit something, but they will have, they will be keeping fishing vessels and other shipping traffic out of the missile trajectory area and the drop zones for these stages. You know, they'll have some Coast Guard vessels or other vessels out there creating a temporary safety zone. But that in itself also involves disruptions to the local commercial fishing industry that need to be looked at in an EIS. But it, to me, it's the larger issue of emplacing, really against the will of the local population, emplacing a missile test and development facility smack in the in an area that really is one of the most biologically pristine areas in North America. And I think that's the sort of overall issue. This site was originally touted to the local residents as a commercial launch facility. It was developed by the state of Alaska on the grounds that it would be launching communication satellites into polar orbits. And it was sold to the people on those grounds. There haven't been any commercial communications launches from the Kodiak launch facility, and the so far the customers have been exclusively military, and it looks like that's going to be a lineup for the indefinite future. And to even call it a commercial launch site is a grotesque misnomer, since it was secretly financed by federal money. Funneled by Alaska senators to the state and to the cronies of the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization, who now staff something called the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation. So it's not really a commercial facility in any normal sense of that term.
When asked if the commercial launch facility was more akin to a front company than anything else, Christopher Payne had this to say.
That's exactly what, it's the best characterization I've heard of it. It was a front company. It was staffed by representatives of the Reagan-Bush-era Strategic Defense Initiative Organization, now renamed the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization. It's been on the federal dole secretly for a number of years. And then now suddenly it emerges full-blown as a potential test site for ballistic missile defense. Took everybody by surprise. I mean, most people in Washington had never heard of the place before last July 12th.
Chris Payne details more about the National Missile Defense Testbed being proposed in the Pacific, as well as expanding upon some of the health and environmental effects of a possible testbed and its components.
The thing about environmental impacts is, and an environmental impact analysis is how far you're willing to look, and how far the courts are willing to look in terms of the connected and cumulative impacts. Sure, the Pentagon's going to come in and say, we're only deploying 5 silos in an area where the previous administration had planned to deploy 100. So, of course, our environmental impacts are less than what they had previously analyzed, therefore there's no issue. But that is an extremely deceptive and misleading way to portray what they're doing. Because the previous administration had also said there wouldn't be any flight testing from sites that were analyzed in that EIS. And of course, now that may change under the new program, and clearly is going to change with this proposal to develop a missile defense system testbed encompassing many sites in Alaska and the Gulf of Alaska and the Northern Pacific and extending all the way to the Marshall Islands. So there's going to be a significant and stepped up ballistic missile testing activity as opposed to deployment. But looking longer term, this administration has an agenda to get out of the ABM treaty, which it may do as early as this November. It may give notice that it intends to withdraw from this treaty and develop and test and deploy who knows what. Without a treaty, the potential deployment is open-ended, and therefore the environmental impacts are open-ended. So we may be seeing just the camel's nose under the tent in terms of the long-run environmental impacts from deploying a rather massive ballistic missile defense system. And that includes things such as X-band radars, very powerful short-wavelength radars that, if you get at all close to them, have quite harmful effects on the human body. That's ionizing radiation, electromagnetic radiation. And so, you know, there are significant issues. There have been groups in the United States fighting these so-called phased array radars that were deployed for early warning purposes for years, and worrying about the health effects and worrying about whether the beam or the side lobes of the radar would come down and affect the health of the local residents. And this is a problem that you face in spades when you're talking about an X-band radar. And now they're proposing to shift the X-band radar from a very remote site in Alaska, where they had originally proposed to deploy it, on Shemya Island, which is at the very tip of the Aleutians. They're now proposing to put that radar in Hawaii, on Kauai, or perhaps on a ship where it would be cruising around the North Pacific and participating in various types of tests. In either case, the environmental impacts of that need to be very closely examined. If you're close enough and you step into that beam and you get any you know, significant dose, it can kill you. But you know, it just depends. You know, it's a function of the distance and the intensity of the radiation that you're subjected to. But you don't want, you know, the question in health physics is whether this is whether there's any threshold below which it's you know, any safe dose really that can be accepted from this electromagnetic radiation. And that's an issue that hasn't been resolved. I mean, the military thinks it has been resolved and thinks there's no evidence, clinical evidence, that low levels of electromagnetic radiation can be damaging. But our position is the jury is out on that question, and that this is something that needs to be looked at very carefully in an environmental impact statement.
This feature contains segments of interviews with Melanie Dutchin, a climate and nuclear campaigner for Greenpeace USA, and Christopher E. Payne, a senior research analyst for the Natural Resources Defense Council's nuclear program. All of the featured interviews were conducted during the last week of September in the year 2001. And this feature contains segments from the track Tear Tear from Autechre's 1995 LP Amber. That's it for this program. You've been listening to One Part in Ten, the KVSC News feature series, The Defense Pretense, a critical look at proposed missile shields. Reporting for KVSC-FM News, I'm Jed Cousin.